You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host.
And also, Charles, we're going to interview an amazing investor to see what they did to become a successful breakthrough investor and how you can use some of what they are doing so you can also become a breakthrough investor. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
I'm just super excited for the guest on this show. You know, I met him in person at the Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference, and he's just an amazing guy, very humble-hearted and very friendly and very helpful person, man. So I'm super excited. Are you excited to bring this guest on today too, William?
I'm really excited, and a lot of it is kind of selfish on my part today since I've recently become an entrepreneur myself. So I'm looking for any help I can get in that arena, and I think Rocky is probably a good way to start.
That's awesome, man. Well, this is going to be good for you too, William, because you know we're both going to get to hear from Rocky firsthand. So today's guest, he serves as a chief profitability advisor for business owners and real estate investors. He teaches them how to ensure that they get paid and make profit a priority. He has personal experience with rental properties and flipping houses. He works with real estate investors and professionals to help them manage their business and ensure profitability. And the cool thing about today's guest is he started with nothing. He started absolutely nothing. His parents migrated to the U.S. when he was 2 years old. And man, I just love his story just because, you know, many of us started from nothing. I know I started from nothing in the third world country. And so you're going to get to hear from him today. And in spite of all the struggles with his mom passing away when he was 7 years old, he was still able to achieve not just financial success, but just life success in general. And he loves to share his stories and inspire others to achieve their dreams even faster. So that is why today's guest is none other than Rocky Lalvani. What's up, Rocky? Good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me here. Excited to be with you both.
Man, we are super excited too, Rocky. So Rocky, man, I just love meeting you at RubeCon, and I didn't get to talk to you as much as I would have liked to at RubeCon with it, you know, working behind the scenes. But I'm excited to hear you, man, today and hear more about your story. So tell us more about your investing journey and what initially made you want to do it.
So when I was young, I saw people with money and people without, and I knew I wanted to be a millionaire. So I was very entrepreneurial as a kid. At the same point, we didn't have a lot. So if we wanted nicer things in my house, I needed to learn to swing a hammer, right? I needed to know how to upgrade the bathrooms or do the work or put a new roof on the house. So I had a background of having to do these things out of necessity. And when I was in college, I actually got my real estate license. So I was selling real estate in college. The worst part, though, is I didn't get my first investment property until I was in my 40s. I couldn't figure out the numbers behind it. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. For whatever reason, I couldn't wrap my head around it correctly until I finally did. So there was that long delay of inaction, which, you know, think about it. If I bought houses 20 years earlier, how much more money would I have had just because of appreciation and everything else? And so that was kind of the downfall. But then once we started doing it, then it kind of really took off, and it's like, oh, now I get it, right? And sometimes you just have to do it to get it and let go of that fear. And then after that, things are good. Now I'm at the other end of the curve going, you know what? I'm tired of doing this. I don't need to, so I won't. So backing out, and with real estate up, you know, the rentals, it's time to start pulling out the profits and enjoying life more so.
Yeah. So Rocky, let's thank you for sharing that, man. I'd like for you to go deeper, man, because I feel like, you know, you have a story that our audience needs to hear. Like, how was that journey with you growing up, you know, even, you know, with your family and everything that happened to your mom, and how did that like change your life and the trajectory of your life as an investor?
So one of the things that now I realize was weird, but I just thought it was normal, is that when my parents got together with their friends who had also immigrated, they talked about money. They would talk about rental real estate. They would talk about their investments. Like, money conversations were normal. If you bought a rental house, somebody would ask you, how much did you pay for that? If you bought a new car, people would be like, well, how much did you pay for that? Did you get a discount? How'd you do it? And so there was a lot more sharing financial knowledge.
That's something that we lack in America pretty badly, I think.
I just didn't realize that people didn't talk about money. That's why, like, when I was much older, you know, in my 40s, I'm looking around, go, why aren't there more millionaires? Why is this such a struggle? And I came to realize, A, people don't talk about money. B, people have a whole lot of emotions around money, right? That they don't always necessarily, they talk about it, but not directly. You'll hear it in the words they say under their breath or in the little comments they make. And the other thing is, we're a consumer society. So everyone's driven to spend, not to actually save. And there are a lot of people out there who know how to make money. There's very few people who know how to keep money. And actually, we just lost one of the greats who knows how to keep money and make it grow, Charlie Munger. This stuff is not rocket science. Those two guys, you know, they do basic stuff and they have patience and they wait for opportunities instead of rushing around like everyone else does.
Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, if anyone's listening, I think a lot of people know who Charlie Munger is, but Charlie Munger is a good friend of Warren Buffett. He was 99 years old, about a month away from his birthday, I believe. And he was the right-hand man of Berkshire, Warren Buffett's company, as the vice president or vice chairman, I believe. So, but you're totally right, Rocky. He definitely knew about money. And so I think our guests, they're going to want to know about money. And you have this whole system that you work with to help people. Talk more about that. Talk about your system and how can it help people with their how to keep money and how to invest.
So I think it really comes down to A, being intentional with money, number one. Number two, everyone is told to pay themselves first. Right? How many people actually pay themselves first? Most business owners pay themselves last. And even if you're a W-2 employee and you get paid, paying yourself first means saving your money, putting it aside, and then learning to live on the rest. So the principles here are basically to spend less than you earn. And it doesn't matter whether you're a business owner, real estate investor, or just a W-2 employee. These principles work no matter what. They're based on timeless principles from, you know, hundreds of years ago. So Profit First is a book by Mike Michalowicz. What Mike did was take the basic principles of personal finance and bring them to business. And to take the system to say, hey, give every dollar a job and send it to do that job, but also to change the equation. So everyone knows in business, everyone's told sales minus expenses equals profit. And so where is profit? It's a leftover. It's last. What Mike said is, wait a minute, if we're in business to be profitable, why aren't we taking our profit first? So he said, let's do sales minus profit equals expenses. And now we're constraining our spending, which is essentially what this all comes down to. Now, I think there's a lot of people out there go, oh, you're putting me on a budget. Budgets suck. I get that. And they feel like they can't live life, but that nothing is further from the truth. When you have financial freedom, you get to live life as you choose. I think more often than not in America, people waste a large portion of their money, where they put themselves into predicaments where their cost of living is more, or even their cost of running their business is more than what they're bringing in. And that slight negative gap is a major problem. But if you can start saving even a little bit of money and allowing it to compound, then you end up like Warren Buffett. I mean, the reason Warren Buffett is so rich is because he's 92 years old and he's been compounding for like 72 years. That's phenomenal. And the problem is most people don't start. So let's have a little fun. Do you know how much a dollar doubled for 31 days is?
Isn't that like a million or something?
A million or something.
I don't know.
Charles, what's your answer? Can you come up with a better answer than William did? Because I'm just going to tell you, he's way off.
A dollar? Man, I don't know. Do you want me to guess?
Yeah. Well, so it's day one is $1. Day two is $2. Day three is $4. Day four is $8. Day five is $16. And we're going to go out to day 31. So, what's the number on 31?
So that's exponential growth. So I'm just gonna throw out a number. Let's just say 3 million.
It's $1 billion.
How does it add me with just mine?
$1 billion. Okay. Wow. Why do you think Warren Buffett is so rich? He didn't make his first billion till he was in his 50s. That's when he hit the billion mark.
Wow.
The fact that he's lived another 40 years, that money has continued to compound. And he's very good at not spending it. Right. You don't think Warren lives a nice life, but he lives reasonably because he realizes that that's just the way to do it. So here's the second question. Right. We talked about how I waited to get involved in real estate. If you wait one day to start that dollar doubling, how much money do you lose?
A lot.
This is simple math. How much is that answer?
You lose $1 billion since you...
If you wait one day, you lose $500 million because you lose your last double.
Wow.
And this is what people don't realize is if you don't take action, it's not the beginning that you're losing. It's the end. And you wait 2 days, you're down like 800 million. 3 days, you're down 900 million. You don't even have 100 million. At that point. So if you're not taking action, you're never going to get the results. And too often, I think what people do is they take action, they go this direction, then they stop. No, I give up. Now they go that direction. They start over. You keep starting over, you're not going to compound. Mm-hmm. You have to get clarity. You have to show up and you have to do the work. And I don't believe in grinding, right? You can work less and make more, but you've got to have total clarity on where you're going. Because if you don't have clarity, you're going to wander. And if you wander, you're not going to get those kinds of results.
Man, that's some serious wisdom right there, man.
So, Rocky, don't wander. Like, I've read Profit First, really, really liked it. Honestly, need to read it again, probably more than once again. How did you get into that? Like, I know that you teach that. How did you get into that aspect?
So, I was doing personal finance. And I was teaching about personal finance. And then I learned something that Warren Buffett already knew. And Warren says, nobody wants to get rich slowly. Everyone wants to get rich this weekend. And so if I come out and I say, hey, I'll teach you how to get rich in real estate this weekend, 10 grand, everyone will line up and throw 10 grand at me. Okay. If I tell you, hey, I can make you a millionaire in 10 years, it's going to be a hard struggle to get one person to give me 10 grand. Everyone's trying to get rich quick and it doesn't work. So I was in this space and I realized, wait a minute, these people, they're not buying what, and they're not connecting with me. And I got introduced to the Profit First book and there was a major light bulb moment. I'm like, what do you mean business owners don't look at their financial reports? Like 75% of business owners, 80% of business owners don't look at their financials. How can that be? And it's like, oh, they went into business to do what they love, and looking at the numbers and being an accountant wasn't on the list. Well, if you're a business owner and you're not looking at your numbers, I can assure you, you have many sleepless nights and many cash flow struggles. So I realized, wait a minute, business owners need help. And unlike people who aren't in business, they're willing to pay for help today. So it was a much better market fit. I was able to work with people who wanted to work with me, right? So the offering and the market came together and I partnered. I like all the stuff Mike teaches in Profit First. It's the way I live my life. I'm like, well, I could do this myself, but I'm like, you know what? I don't want to do all that marketing. I don't want to create all those systems. Why not just partner with Mike and they have all the systems. I can start doing the parts of the business that I love, which is helping business owners build wealth. And so it was a kind of that perfect marriage for me.
Nice. Awesome.
That's awesome. So man, I thank you for sharing that, man. I think that's so true that a lot of business owners don't even look at that. Isn't that mind blowing that a lot of business owners don't even look at their financials? I mean, what was that number you said, about 75%?
75, 80%. How many house flippers look at their numbers at the end of the project? What was my budget?
I would hope all of them, but...
You'd hope all, but the question is, did you go in with a budget? Did you, when the project was done, measure against the budget to see where you were right and where you were incorrect with your assumptions? And then what do you do with the money that comes out? So I'll tell you what tends to happen in the space of real estate. They get their first house and they start flipping it. Maybe they make money. Maybe they don't make money. Then they're like, okay, first of all, money's flying because now you're talking big dollars. So little dollars all of a sudden start slipping through the cracks. Then they get their second house and things start going well. They start getting up to the fifth, sixth house. And now everything starts to get murky. Where did I buy that toilet? Which project did that go in? Did I properly account for it? What was the true cost here? What was my time worth? Oh, wait, there was financing costs. Did I include my hard money loan in there? Did I not? And pretty soon they start to get themselves where it's like, hey, I need another house because I need cash flow. And now they're starting to dig a hole faster and faster.
Yeah, I definitely can see that coming from a construction background. That is not my strong suit at all. And I'll tell you that flat out. So I would be one of those guys, except now I think I'm smart enough to realize I got to figure that out to begin with. So
and I work with a lot of guys in the trades, and most of them, you know, when they're solo, it's fine. They know what they're doing. It's pretty good. It's when they start hiring people, when somebody else starts doing their quoting, and nobody knows what's going into the job. And then they get into the, like, even though they have $1 million in revenue, they're like, where'd my money go? It disappeared, right? You're shaking your head. You know it. Mm-hmm. It happens all the time because people aren't getting crystal clear on where this money is flowing in their business. And that's one of the problems that Profit First solves. But we do so much more for our clients than Profit First. That's like the entry level to get started.
That's awesome. What else do you guys do? What else is on your plate?
So we look at the business from the beginning to the end. All right. In other words, how are you generating revenue? Well, in order for a sale to happen, what has to happen? They have to know who you are. How do they know who you are? How much are you spending on marketing? How many leads are you getting? How many of your leads convert to sales? How often do people buy? All of that's telling you what your revenue is. And then we start looking at, where's your spending? Are you appropriately priced? What are your overhead costs? You know, what is all of that? And then we start looking at things where money disappears that people don't see. Do people owe you money who haven't paid you? The longer they owe you, the less likely you get paid. So money starts to disappear into accounts receivable. Money starts to disappear because you started shoving all these expenses into the business because it's a business expense and you don't realize how much you're spending out of your business that's not really business. You start borrowing money and you don't know what you're lent. So even though there's 100 grand in the bank, you forgot you owe 100 and a quarter. And so that's not really your money that you're spending. You're spending other people's money. And so while you think you're profitable, you're actually not. So all of these other things are happening within the business, and it's understanding how that money flows in and out of the business. And that's what I love to do. I love looking at spreadsheets and figuring it all out. I didn't know that. I assumed everyone else loved that too.
That's awesome, man. I mean, we each, Williams, like, God bless people. I'm that kind of guy too, Rocky. I love spreadsheets. You know, in fact, the job that I had, we manage big projects, like hundreds of millions of dollars. And a lot of it we do from spreadsheets. You know, we have systems and everything too, but a lot of it we did from spreadsheets. But you're so right that a lot of people don't do that because, you know, some of the, you know, some, when we get like a new manager who comes in and, you know, you tell them, you know, hey, you know, we got to do the monthly financial. They're like, really? Y'all do that every month? We only do that like once a year, or we don't do that. And I think a lot of, so not only the small businesses, but big businesses are doing that, aren't even looking to, you know?
No, they're not. Think about this though. If your employees aren't good with money, why do you think they're going to be good with your money? I mean, at the end of the day, employees are taught to spend money. They're not taught to conserve money. They're not taught that you need to be profitable. Most employees don't even know where the money comes from. They think, you know, it's magically grown in your business. You're a business owner. You magically have millions of dollars to just pay us. You know, they have no idea of what goes into running the business, the cost of the business, and how much money they waste on an average day.
Yeah, that's so true. And so when you dive into a business, when you dive into the financials and you're helping business owners, what are some of the first things that you help them address to be profitable first?
So I think the first thing we want to do is get clarity on what is currently happening in the business. Once we've got that first step of clarity, I can usually see where in their business the biggest problem is. So it could be a revenue generation problem. They don't have good lead flow. It could be that they have a pricing constraint. So they're not appropriately charging for what they're delivering. And so they don't have good margins. And if you don't have good margins, you can't cover your overhead. Or either that, maybe they have a collections problem. Who knows? Maybe there's stuff in the business that they're just spending money on for the sake of spending, and they don't even know whether it's a worthwhile spend or an unworthwhile spend. So the first thing we do is try and figure out what are the biggest levers that we can make the biggest difference in the fastest amount of time that require the least amount of effort. Back to, I don't believe in grinding it out. Right? There's this whole grind culture. No, you don't have to work harder. You have to work smarter. But that means you have to think about your business. Going back to Warren Buffett, they sit around reading books all day, thinking. They don't run around like crazy doing. Yet the average person is doing the opposite.
It sounds like they're following that. What's that, Charles? The 80-20 rule? You're only really efficient for about 20% of the day that you got to do 100%, but you're really only efficient for about 20%. And the other 80% is drudgery for you. And you don't even like it, but it's got to happen.
Well, and so you're procrastinating. You're not doing anything. So if you think about it, the first thing is to figure out what's my 20% and what is giving me the results, and then figuring out how to get the 80% off your plate or just not do it. So for example, I get too many emails. So I was like, okay, I'm going to hire a VA to look at my emails. And then I'm like, okay, I need to come up with a system. So then I started looking at my emails. I'm like, this stuff is all crap. Why am I paying somebody to look at my crap? Why don't I just get rid of the emails? And so rather than hiring a VA, I started unsubscribing and getting rid of emails, but I still got too many. And then I found a software that would sort it for me and only give my most important emails to me. And then I went through email withdrawal because I didn't get that many emails. And I was okay with it. And it cost me a fraction of the money because I spent the time to figure out a system that worked for me, not for you, Charles, for me in the way I want to do things. And then once I implemented it, it saved me hours. I picked up at least an hour a day.
Yeah.
With email. And that's just one thing. What else can you do?
Yeah. That's so true, man. And I think, you know, part of becoming what we call a breakthrough investor, you know, breaking through mindsets and getting to that next level and getting beyond failure and everything is exactly the things that you're talking about, right? Like getting your business in order, right? And because, you know, if you're trying to break to that next level and you're struggling financially, you don't even know what you're spending. You know, it's going to be much harder, would you say, Rocky, to break into that next level?
It is. You're not going to break into the next level. So here's the sad truth that nobody talks about. Do you know the number one reason businesses go bankrupt?
What is it? I'm curious to know.
Growth. They grow themselves into a cash flow problem and they go bankrupt because of it. Because they didn't find how much cash do I need to run my business, and they keep investing all the cash to growth and they have nothing left to pay overhead. They expand too fast. You know, even in real estate, they go buy six new flips and then they have no money to pay for the rehab. Well, what do you think's going to happen? Now I own six flips. I can't rehab a single one. What's going to happen? I'm going to go bankrupt. I'm going to lose them all because I didn't figure out that, wait a minute, I need all the money to do the rehab. Or they borrow money and they start doing this stuff. And then the bank gets a little nervous. They're like, wait a minute, you borrowed all this money and your numbers don't look so great anymore and your ratios are out of sync. We're going to cancel your loan. And what do you do? Mm-hmm. No one else is going to step up in that situation, or your cost of funds goes through the roof. You people borrow money at hard money. I mean, before interest rates went up, it was 12%, 15%. I don't even know how high it is right now. But did you put that cost into your calculation? Are you still profitable at the end of the day? Or are you grinding out, doing all this stuff and have nothing to show for it? And the reality is, I can tell you, because I've seen the books of people with hundreds of doors, and that's what the situation they're in. Mm-hmm. They're grinding and they're getting nothing.
Yeah, that man, gosh, that's so true. And I mean, I have friends too in that same situations. I mean, they have hundreds of doors, some even thousands. You know, they're in big trouble right now, especially, you know, not knocking down syndication. It's great when you do it right and do the right part of the cycle. But I know people who are in trouble because, you know, going back to some of the same things that you mentioned, right, that wasn't managed properly. So, yeah, man, I think this is very, very good for our listeners to hear, because this is so important to even be a breakthrough investor. Would you agree with that?
I would. And so if you had talked to me 3 years ago, I would have started to say to you, interest rates are going up. Is our deal going to cash flow at 8% that it was cash flowing at 4%? Because if it's not, we got a problem. And if money starts mm-hmm. to tighten up, how are we going to handle that? If the lenders start wanting 70% loan to value instead of 75 or 80, how are you going to handle margin call? And if you don't, I mean, let's face it, you know, during COVID, the cost of material skyrocketed. Your ability to get labor shrank. Your project that was 3 months took 7 months, and all your costs were up 40%. What did mm-hmm. you do? How did you handle it? Were you ready for that? Did you have cash reserves? So if things went wrong, you were able to handle it. Most people don't. Most people in the world of real estate, everyone lives on the edge. You live on the edge. One day you're going to slip over the edge. And that's what's happening in the world of syndications. Money was so cheap and so plentiful that any fool could become a syndicator. And the projections that they used, I'm going to tell you the truth, they made them up, okay? They just guessed. This is what my loan to, you know, my rehab value is after the fact. Most of these people have no clue. You think they do because they look good or they sound good, but the reality is they're really good at marketing. They're not good at running a project. And running a project is multiple things. It's acquisition, that's one skill. Rehab, that's another skill. And then running property management, that's a third skill. And then throughout this whole thing is the finance skill. And then there's all the outside factors that happen. We don't control interest rates, but we got to deal with them. We don't, you know, margin call or whatever it is, you have to be able to handle this. And when people have very little skin in the game, it's just easy for them to walk away and everybody loses money. And a lot of those syndication deals, I'm involved in groups that people are investors, and the constant conversation is this deal went bust, that deal went bust. And you even see it, San Francisco, office buildings, hotels, they're handing the keys and go, here are the keys, we're out, we're done. We don't care anymore. So I think people have to plan for that and be ready for those things. Now, this is all negative. You can do things positively. You just have to plan for it, and you have to have margin, that's all. And you have to run your numbers and look at your spreadsheets and have contingencies and know that your numbers are for real.
That's so true, man. And I think some people might even be listening right now and be thinking, oh man, shoots, I did this all the wrong way. But it's kind of hard to kind of get in that right frame of mind to get on this profit first journey. What would you advise those people to do? And then also touch on the people who might be in the right mind frame of mind. How can they stay there? So kind of two questions in one.
If you don't know your numbers, just start learning. I mean, start figuring it out. I know Dustin has like a spreadsheet that he uses that I think he shares with his people. Like, stop. I think the biggest thing with real estate investors is they're super optimistic. You need a little pessimism on your team. Okay. You need a little reality check in there. So A, first off, figure out your numbers and start to understand them. And if that's not your thing, then put somebody on your team to do it. And then little by little, you move in the direction that you want to go. It just takes time. That's all. And you'll get there. But this is not get rich weekend, right? If that's what you're expecting, chances are you're going to blow up at some point.
It's awesome, man. So Rocky, so let's kind of dive deeper into, you know, the motivation and mindset. So what keeps you up at night knowing that you need to move forward as a breakthrough investor? Or basically, you know, what keeps you motivated to keep investing for the future?
So I have no problem sleeping at night. You know, that is the one, like when you have financial freedom, you don't have problems sleeping at night. If you do, it's because there's something wrong with you, not because of anything else, right? You have money, you don't have problems. I do what I love. Like I love looking at spreadsheets. I love figuring out the numbers. I love, you know, making things go well in making money. But that's my skill set. It took me forever to understand the intersection between what I love doing and the parts that I love doing and letting go of the parts I didn't like. And every one of us is different, right? And so you've got to figure out what are the parts. Everyone's chasing the dollar. They're not chasing their values and what they love. Like, what are you good at? What do you love doing? What is the world willing to pay for? So just because you love doing something and it's fun doesn't mean the world is willing to pay you for it. When I was in the personal finance space, I couldn't get people to pay me for it. It didn't work. So even though I loved it and I was great at it and the world needed it, I wasn't able to figure that out for me. In the business space, it's easy. And so I think that's a big part of it. You have to take the time to understand you. I think more often than not, most people they're following a track that they were put on in a belief system that was created sometime between their ages of 5 and 12 or 13, and they have not reprogrammed themselves. So they're still running on 7-year-old programming. And if you have a 7-year-old, you know, that's not smart to run on 7-year-old programming, right? You need to upgrade that software. You need to upgrade your beliefs, your patterns, what you think about yourself, your views of money, and then also the integration of, hey, what are your God-given talents? How do they fit into this? And how do you also say, what didn't I get? And who do I need help with to fill in the parts that I'm not so good at? And being honest with yourself. But all of this requires thinking. Nobody wants to take the time to sit down and think and say, how do I do this the right way? Everyone's just running around like crazy.
I feel like a lot of people just need somebody to sit down and say, you're not doing this right. Here's how you fix it. Just the start steps. Because I know a lot of guys where they seem like they're doing fine, but you sit down and have a conversation with them and they're constantly running around like all the time. And then for me, I don't want to own my own business and constantly be doing that. That's not why I want to own my own business. So it's kind of maybe a lot of them just don't know where to start as far as assessing where they're at and how to fix it.
No, they don't know where to start. And they also don't know where they're going. They have not defined their end game. That was how Dustin and I met. We met and I'm like, yeah, I believe in work less, make more. Be clear on what you want out of life and go enjoy it. Dustin's like, so do I. I'm like, let's chat, right? But that is a rare conversation that happens because most people in the real estate space are go bros banging their chest, screaming about how many doors they have, not about how much money they actually make. And they're running around like crazy, feeling important, doing the 80% that produces no results because they didn't take the time to think and get the clarity of what they really needed to do and how to do this properly.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's amazing how you shared that. And I think we're seeing like this constant theme, William, of, you know, understanding yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Defining your end game as we bring on guests. So it's just amazing because I know none of you spoke before you started interviewing. Yeah. We're kind of putting you on the spot. So I'm just loving it. And for me and William, I know this helps us grow too. You know, we're young investors and you know, we selfishly are gaining.
From 100%.
Right? Well, but this has been amazing, man. So, Rocky, more than likely, maybe we missed something. Is there anything we missed so our audience can be a breakthrough investor just like you?
So let's just kind of talk about defining your goal. Imagine you've reached your financial success, right? You're going to go celebrate. Right? Where you're going to go to the Caribbean, maybe. That's wonderful. We're going to the Caribbean. You walk on the plane. You sit down. Of course, you're in first class, right? You get your drink before you take off. And all of a sudden, the pilot comes running in at the last second, hops into the seat and goes, "Hey, not sure where we're going today. I'll figure it out when we get up in the air." Didn't have a chance to look around the aircraft. But you know what? They've got a good ground crew here. I'm sure they made sure everything was okay, right? Looks over at the co-pilot, goes, "Do we have enough fuel? Oh, what are you doing? You sitting on that aircraft?
No,
you're getting off."
I'm getting off.
Right? So let me ask you a question. How is that any different than your life? Mm-hmm. Have you defined where you're going? Do you have enough fuel and cash to get there? Have you run your checklists so that you know what your steps are to do it properly? And have you defined it? Now, that pilot who knows where he's going is going to take that plane off on that runway. And for most people in life, they're like that plane going 100 miles an hour down the runway. And they're looking out the window going, "Wait a minute, we're expending all this fuel. The engines are revving and it feels like I'm going nowhere." And that comes back to the compounding curve. In the beginning of the compounding curve, it feels like you're going nowhere. But you know that within seconds that nose is going to come up and that plane's going to take off. And that's the same thing that occurs with compounding. But you got to stay on that runway. You got to keep going with clarity. And once that pilot gets up in the air, he is off course 99% of the time. But he's constantly course correcting, constantly making small pivots, constantly eye on the ball of where that runway is that I'm going to land. And they get there. And they've done it right. And that's literally what people need to do. It's not that difficult. Just go do it.
Man, that is an awesome analogy, Rocky. Man, this has been fantastic. People are going to want to find you, Rocky. They're going to want to listen to you more and more, just like I am, and I'm sure William is too. How can they find you and how can they connect with you?
So I have two podcasts. The one is Profit Answer Man. We teach you how to make the money. And the other one is Richer Soul. You got rich, now what, right? Because the money isn't going to solve your problems. We talk about all the other stuff and the mindsets and creating those plans and having that direction on there. So both of those places you can find me on. Google my name. You'll see me everywhere. It's all me.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much, Rocky. It was great having you on the show. And we'll see you soon, man. We'll see you at RubeCon.
You will. Looking forward to it.